to say that the profitability comes primarily from being organic, because I did make a lot of changes. I improved breeding and I improved paddocks and stuff. But at this stage, the future beef profit monitors are out there, and I'm very definitely holding my own there. It's a case of keeping costs down, produce quality cattle. So everything is tighter, but it is definitely, it's profitable if you're prepared to really make the go of it.
Hello and welcome to The Beef Edge, the Chagas Beef Podcast, for all your latest news, information and advice for Irish beef farmers. I'm Kat Regan, and on this week's episode, future beef farmer Ken Gill from County Offaly discusses his organic beef system and breeding management on his farm. Ken, you're very welcome. What system do you operate?
I'm an organic farmer and I work as a suckler and I finish everything at 2 years of age.
And how long are you operating an organic beef system?
It's been 10 years now since I went into conversion. So it's organic. It takes 2 years. You go into conversion for 2 years when you have to do everything organically, but you still have to sell conventionally. But after 2 years, then you're fully organic. So I started in 13 and I'm fully since 15.
And what made you decide to make the move to operate an organic system?
I don't know. I suppose I've been tipping along for 30 plus years, conventional. I was just looking for, to me, a better way of doing things. I felt my dad was just, he was in his 80s at that stage. So I was looking for a way to maybe cut down and work a little bit as well. And I figured I probably could make as much money out of organic with slightly less cattle and slightly less work. And I genuinely, if I'm honest, at the start, I said, look, it's a 4 or 5 year, 5 or 6 year program, whatever it is. And at the end of it, if I decide it's not working, I can always go back. And I reckon the soil would have had a bit of a rest and be improved. And that was kind of the way my head was thinking at the time. Definitely would never, ever go back now, though.
And what big changes at the time had you to make in order to convert to an organic system?
I suppose probably for most people, and it was the same with me, the biggest thing is the sheds. It's because your cattle need a straw lie back, now which mine would have had mostly anyway. But first year I built an additional lean-to onto a shed and converted some of the slats into a feed area. So that way they had the lie back and they were able to still stand on the slats to eat, but go back onto a straw. After a year or two, I'd had a problem that I'd had even previously with calves having a bit of a respiratory problems in the winter. And that was partly down to a kind of a small, low lean-to they were in. Probably the biggest investment I made was I built a big calf shed. And that's been great because that's really, it's a big open shed with plenty of air and they creep feed into that. And so that was probably the one of the biggest expenses really. And it would be, I'd say, for a lot of people.
Most definitely, and particularly with regard to the housing requirement, as you mentioned. I suppose also there's a view with regard to no nitrogen being applied on the farm and the whole grazing management protocol that has to be managed on the farm. How did you find that?
Yeah, there was a couple of things with that. One was I was lucky enough to get into what used to be called the Better Beef Program a few years ago at Chagas. And one of the things they really pushed was the importance of putting in a proper paddock grazing system. And to be honest, it transformed the place from the summer. It produced more grass, produced better grass. So that was one of the main things. I already had a good bit of clover. I suppose I'd been edging towards organic for a few years. So any reseed I did, I always had maybe a higher level of clover than others. So I always had a good bit of clover. A lot of the older swards, what I noticed with them, what I hadn't ever reseeded them, the clover seems to have improved a bit by not putting any nitrogen out. So from the grazing point of view, the white clover is there and it keeps things ticking along. The other big change, I suppose, in the actual management of the place was putting in red clover. Within a year or two, I kind of thought that seemed to be the way to go. It's a great, it's a high protein crop. For me, it feeds the kind of the yearling stroke stores in the winter. And that led on to then, because going from red clover just back to grass didn't seem to make a lot of sense. I then started to put in a little bit of tillage. So now the rotation contains oats for flavins as well. But the red clover is there as a silage for some of the cattle, and the rest of the nitrogen comes purely from the white clover in the grazing ground.
And how have the stock been performing over the winter that have been fed the red clover silage?
Pretty good. I'd be really interested this year. Last year, I didn't have a lot of red clover silage, but this year they've been in for 3 months totally on red clover silage. So they'll be weighed now in the next week or so. So we'll be interested to see. But generally speaking, they do seem to do very well on red clover alone. Most years, if I don't have red clover, I generally have some of my own oats left, and I'll feed that as a supplement just to go on. But last year, as I say, they didn't, and they didn't do that well on the winter. So I'd say this year they've definitely done better, but it does seem to be a feed, and even it seems to do better than the analysis of the silage would seem to show. Cattle definitely seem to like it.
And how are you going to manage that now over the coming weeks before the first cut is harvested?
Yeah, basically with the red clover, I cut it 3 times in the year, and then if there's a bit much left on it and it's not a good idea to leave too much cover on the ground, I'll mulch it in kind of October, which is what I did last October. So it's looking very well at this stage. The first cut tends to look very grassy because clover is a bit slower to come. So I will get a cut of that in early May, I'd say, and then 2 more good cuts on that, and then mulch it in. The secret of the red clover is very much keeping up when you're mowing. You've got to be up kind of maybe 4 inches or something off the ground, because the bottom part of the red clover grows from, and if you cut that out of it, the red clover just dies out. But for me, it's great. You get a decent amount. You get kind of the equivalent of a conventional heavy first cut over the course of the year. Now, I mean, it takes a whole year to get that, but it's still it's a good amount of stuff that comes off per acre.
And the fact that that's getting no nitrogen, how much slurry is that going to be getting in order to cut the first week of May?
It gets a good go of slurry after each cut. And then the main thing with that is I put a lot of dung on it then in the back end, which it has the whole winter then to take that up. And that keeps your P's and K's right. But it doesn't need nitrogen. I used to be able to get an organic O1010 fertilizer, and it was great because you could put it on one of the cuts, which meant you were keeping your P's and K's up, but you weren't kind of putting any nitrogen on it because it really doesn't need it. But at the end of then, after kind of generally you get 3, 4, maybe 5 years if everything goes really right, but at that stage then you've put a lot of nutrients into the ground, and most people would take at least one crop of corn and then go into oats maybe in the second and third year. I keep the things very simple. I just go with a crop of oats for 2 years after the red clover, and then it's back in the grass.
It's ideal to incorporate it into your rotation, particularly with the fact you're operating tillage on the farm as well.
Yeah, it's for me. I mean, my system is, the rotation is relatively straightforward. Coming out of grass, it gets ploughed up in kind of early summer, well, July, and goes into turnip, grape and kale. So that's there as a feed out. It's strip grazed for November and as much as December as possible, depending on weather. And that really shortens the winter. And the great thing about that is then this year, like, they only had 3 months, say they went in the middle, near the end of December. They're going out now, the end of March. And I had enough red clover to do them pretty much all that. So that's start of the rotation, is you break the ground up, turnip, grape and kale. That's followed by 2 years of oats. There's enough in the ground after all the grass and stuff for 2 years of oats. And after the oats, it goes into the red clover. Red clover goes in with a cover crop of generally peas and barley, pea and wheat, something like that. And that's taken out as a bales kind of early on, but it gives you great cover, stops the weeds getting in, and it gives you a good bulk in your first cut as well. So after that, it's kind of 4 years of red clover and back into oats again, and then finally back into grass.
Ken, you mentioned at the start there that you operate a suckler to beef system. You're calving in the autumn versus the spring. Why are you calving in the autumn?
A couple of reasons, and it's mostly down to being organic, because I know the figures will tell you fairly clearly that spring calving is more profitable than autumn calving generally. For me, one of the big things is I want to finish at 24 months, because I think that's hugely important from an environmental point of view and from a profitability point of view. So if I calve in August, September, and I sell in August, September 2 years later, it means they're finishing off of grass. And they basically get no meal. They get a small bit of meal around weaning time. And that's it then, because as they, the second winter, they're on red clover and then they're finishing off of grass. For me, that's a big thing. The second thing is with, I have dry cows then in the spring. And it's one of the things about organics is grass can be a little bit slow in the spring because you're waiting for the clover to actually start to work. But whatever it is, it's 6 degrees, will get your grass grown. It's maybe 8 degrees before your clover really kicks in. So it will be a little bit later. So having been able to let out your weanlings at this stage, they'll be weaned, and your stores, your cows might have to stay in a little bit longer. But when they are going out, they're going out on a leader follower system. And so again, I work it with the weanlings first, the stores second, and then the cows come in the third day. It's a 3 day in each paddock. But the cows are just coming in for cleanup, but it means you have dry cows, you don't need to have a lot of grass for them. Now there are some disadvantages. You're selling at a lower price, the price will always be lower then than it is in the spring, because there's a much higher demand in the spring. But for me, there's no meal, there's very little cost, and some of the expenses that you get in conventional that rule it out is like having to have straw for your calves and stuff. It's not an issue for me because I have to have a straw for my calves anyway, so it doesn't really count against the system. So yeah, I found that this works well for me, and I'm very happy with it now.
And the fact that you're feeding no meal in the organic system, can you go through how you get the heifers and the steers, what targets you're looking for in order for them to be brought to finish?
Yeah, I have to keep the figures very simple. Basically, you want to try and get as close to a kilo a day for life. And a kilo a day for life is 365 plus 365. And with a 50% kill out, and your aim should be killing out at 365. I haven't quite made that yet, but I think last year, maybe the year before, they were close on 350 average at 2 years of age, coming off the grass with no meals. So if I can keep doing that, I'm very happy. And that's partly down to the improved grazing with the paddocks and stuff, but it's a lot down to improved breeding. I put a fair bit of time and effort into picking bulls to breed. I breed a good few that are based on replacements, because I'm still trying to improve the herd, still trying to build it up, get my figures up. But eventually the aim is to have a full herd of kind of 4 and 5 star cows that I can breed primarily to terminal, and not have quite so many going to replacement, which is what's happening at the minute. But I'm the way the cows work is they're primarily continental in the cows, so I've got limousines, I've got a bit of cemental, there's a bit of Albrecht just the last couple of years coming in. So that's keeping a bit of shape and size in the cow. But then when I'm breeding back then for terminal, I generally use a really good terminal Angus bull. And while some people think Angus are just small and they won't make weights, there's plenty of good terminal Angus bulls that if you breed them with a good, solid cow, you'll still make the weights. I really notice that when the sheets come back from the factory, the Angus aren't all down at the bottom weights and others up at the top. There's a good mix through it, generally speaking. So, you know, on average, they're doing fine, but they're easy calving and still making the weights.
The fact that you're using 100% AI cane, that gives you a huge flexibility in order to pick the sires for particular cows.
The system I'm kind of working, it's hard to do without being 100% AI, because I'm just constantly trying to improve the replacements and also trying to have good enough terminals. So for me, the 100% AI, it just works. You see it. You just see it in the results over the last 4 or 5 years, because I'm killing all cattle at the same time of the year. It's very easy to compare 1 year with another, and there have been significant improvements. But now I'd probably start to plateau fairly soon. But if I can plateau at getting most cattle coming in at 365 dead weight, I'll be very happy with that now.
And what heat detection aids do you use in order to keep the calving so compact?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm under a bit of pressure from my son, who's doing ag science, where he's leaving for to start doing something. I worked on constant vigilance, really. They're in the shed. It's another advantage of the autumn calving. They go in to the shed as soon as about a week before I want to start AI and give them a chance to get settled. But then they're in the shed and I'm here full time. I'm lucky enough to be able to be working full time. So I will look at them every couple of hours right up until kind of 11 o'clock at night, and then very first thing in the morning as well. So far, that's been working okay for me. I mean, I'm not ruling out the possibility of maybe going with tail paint, or even possibly putting a couple of cameras in the shed so that it can record them and have a look back over it. But so far, I've been doing reasonably okay on picking them up. I do a strict 6 week when things go right, but that's another whole story. I do a strict 6 week AI, and so that leaves I'm very tied up for 6 weeks around that time. I'm tied up for about 8 weeks around calving time, but at least that's it. Then the rest of the year, there's a bit more flexibility in the system. So I think it's worth it. Now, I lose a certain amount of good quality cows and heifers every year that don't go and calf because of that. But I just think it's worth it from an overall mix of living and work.
That's great, Kieran. I suppose for farmers that's considering conversion to organics, looking back on your experience in the past 10 years, what advice have you for them?
I think probably the main thing is to be absolutely sure that it's what you want to do. Because at the start, it can be a bit daunting. It can be a bit, you're not quite sure what you're doing. 90%, as I said earlier, of what you do is just ordinary farming. The other 10%, you just have to kind of learn. Be prepared to make it work. It's your mindset as much as anything else. Once you decide, yes, this is what I'm doing and I'm going to make it work, you find ways to make it work. And it does work once you get the hang of it. The other thing is, like, I have a system here that I'm very happy with, but my neighbors right beside me might decide to go for something completely different. You have to find what works for you and what works for your land. And that's very much it. It's a bit more, I think, for me, it's a bit more than conventional. It's very much personal to your own place and what you can make it do. But I think, you know, your next question you're going to ask me is it profitable? And I've been reluctant to say that the profitability comes primarily from being organic, because I did make a lot of changes. I improved breeding and I improved paddocks and stuff. But at this stage, the future beef profit monitors are out there, and I'm very definitely holding my own there. It's a case of keeping costs down, produce quality cattle, don't waste anything. Like years ago, I would have topped a lot of ground during the course of the summer when it got too strong because I put nitrogen out. That doesn't really happen anymore. Everything is grazed tight, and if the paddock gets a little bit strong at all, and I do grass measure, which kind of gives me a heads up on that. So if it gets a bit strong at all, it's held back, and I make a few bales out of it. So everything is tighter, but it is definitely, it's profitable if you're prepared to really make the go of it.
That's fantastic, Kieran. And I suppose really you're featuring in the Future Beef webinar. When are you featuring?
No, I'm in the webinar tonight at 8 o'clock, and there's three farmers. We're talking about different aspects of calving. Particularly about calving at 24 months is my big thing. But so that's on tonight, and you're all very welcome to come and join us.
That's great, Kieran. And there's also two other nights, Monday the 28th of March at 8 p.m, focusing on getting the cow back in calf, and Wednesday the 27th of March at 8 p.m, focusing on genetics for the future. So we look forward to tuning in tonight to hear what you have to say, Kieran. Thanks very much.
No problem.
Next, Joseph Dunphy from Grass Tin will give this week's update.
We're coming off the back of a very difficult week weather-wise again, with heavy spells of rain leaving ground very difficult to get any grazing or field work completed. When we look at the weather forecast from Met Éireann again for this week, we're still looking at 25 to 30 millimetres of rain for the west and the south, and 30 to 40 millimetres for the east, which won't improve that situation just yet. With all this rainfall, grazing still has not got off the ground for many farmers. So I suppose the key messages here are to start small with your lighter animals and in paddocks with lower covers of grass, and keep them moving with 24-hour breaks if possible. Live weight gain will be better for these animals, and there will be a saving on silage, which is tight on many farms throughout the country. As we move later now into March, we will have to assume at this stage that some silage ground may not get grazed. So there will be some decisions to make over the next week or 10 days on what the fertiliser strategies are for these paddocks that will get grazed, and the fertiliser strategies for some paddocks that won't get grazed. If we're not going to graze some silage ground and there's a good cover of grass on it, slurry will have to be skipped, and P and K will have to be applied in the form of 0730 at a rate of between 2 to 3 bags per acre if completed in late March. If it is out into April when you're applying your P&K, we would say a rate of 2 bags per acre. From a nitrogen point of view, we'll be topping up with a product, the likes of 38 plus 7 at 2 bags per acre, which is satisfying the nitrogen and sulphur needs of that paddock. Your other option is that if that paddock will be grazed by the end of the first week of April, we can still aim for slurry on these paddocks. However, it's going to be very, very important that slurry is dilute and at a rate of in around 2,500 to 3,000 gallons per acre, and then topped up after a couple of weeks with your nitrogen plus sulfur source, again a product the likes of 38 plus 7, which satisfies the nitrogen and sulfur requirements for the paddock.
That's all for this week's episode, and my thanks to Kane and Joe for joining me on the show. You can catch up on all other shows and interviews from the Beef Edge podcast on the Chagas website at chagas.ie, or you can listen on Apple and Google Podcasts as well as Spotify. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe so you never miss a show. For all other updates from our beef programme, keep an eye on our Twitter and Facebook pages. Until next time, I'm Catherine Egan, and thanks for listening.